Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvania's emergency medical services were near crisis before the COVID-19 pandemic hit the state due to fewer EMTs, paramedics, and volunteers, and not enough financial support. But now the situation has become even more dire. Joining us on today's program is Jerry Ozog, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Fire and Emergency Services Institute. Mr. Ozog, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott.
Also joining us is Donald DeRemus, who is the legislative chair with the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania. Mr. DeRemus, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Jerry Ozog, let me start with the broad question. How have Pennsylvania's emergency services been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, let me start with there are people in this field, in the street every day, your EMTs, your paramedics, your firefighters, both career and volunteer, that are really facing something that has not been faced with before. And it is truly the dedication of them going to work and volunteering every day that keeps the system going. It is their dedication that really makes a difference throughout the Commonwealth. As you mentioned clearly, and as we spoke before in previous shows, the system was fragile to begin with. And this has just exacerbated the problem when it comes to the system. And it truly is not a system. It's a series of independent organizations attempting to survive in a very difficult environment. So the challenges that we face now, in 6 months and in a year, is going to continue to get worse.
Hmm. So what are some of those challenges?
Well, number one, it is the... So it's the preparedness for the emergency response. There is that in the eastern part of the state, that preparedness in the emergency response, the ramp up to that. You know, I want to say that there was a struggle for organizations to get the proper equipment to start with and the education out there. But as the weeks have gone on, things have gotten better. The services have been more prepared. There's been more education out there. There's been more awareness. However, with that, the normal mode of operations for many organizations, their daily call volumes have decreased. We have a system that's based on fee-for-service. The more calls that you go on, the more revenue that organizations generate. And because of the changes, because everyone's following the social distancing protocols, the call volumes are down throughout the state. Organizations rely on the revenue from those from calls to keep going. So many of these organizations were barely breaking even now, and on a current operation. And now with the decrease in volume, we see the storm clouds are coming with those organizations and their ability to survive and pay their people.
You're talking about finances. Actually, it's a good thing that there are fewer calls, but because you are paid on a per-service call, I can see what you're talking about with the model. Maybe it's the model we should be talking about. So let me turn to you now, Donald DeRemus. Ambulances, how have ambulances in particular been impacted by this?
Extreme amount of PPE use. Every call is, I'm from the eastern part of the state, so we have a tremendous outbreak here. My service alone has seen over 200 to 250 COVID contacts. So every patient basically is being treated as a COVID patient until proven otherwise. And it's a whole different animal from what the normal emergency services. And I wouldn't say that call volume is a good thing, because we're not seeing the normal daily call volume that you can see with cardiac patients and stroke patients. And through actual trip data, we're seeing that patients are refusing to go to the hospital because they're afraid of catching COVID at the hospital.
Yeah, actually, I was planning a program on that earlier this week. I saw that there were a number of hospitals that were saying that doctors who were saying that they were very concerned that those who are suffering from some serious illnesses where normally they would be going to the emergency room, that they're deciding not to because they are afraid of being exposed to the virus. You've seen that firsthand.
Exactly, and we've actually seen the other part of this is the COVID patients that are being evaluated and then tested are being sent home to isolate, and when we get those calls for those patients again, they're really bad. They're in extremis, and they're having major difficulties.
So you said that at first, and I think Jerry said that at first you were having problems getting the equipment. Do you have the equipment now? What did you need that you didn't have?
Personally, our service saw this coming and ramped up for it way ahead of time, so we were a little better off than some of the other services. The big issue for us is gowns. There's a tremendous shortage of gowns. Initially, the vendors dried up with their ability to provide stuff. And the other thing that we haven't been able to get is viral filters for any of our respiratory procedures.
So are you ramped up now, though? Are you in good shape with equipment?
Yeah, we're in good shape. I think the state has finally caught up with the PPE issue, same with the federal government. So PPE is being distributed pretty much routinely.
Jerry, is that the case across the state?
I believe so. I have not. I believe the emergency management agencies have been setting up logistic deployments, and I have not heard of major PPE shortages recently, within the last week at all.
So Donald mentioned that he had 250 exposures to those who have tested positive. I hope I have that right. But this is an issue across the state. So Jerry Ozog, let me ask you this question. How are you keeping, I say you, that's, overall, how are we keeping first responders safe from being exposed and contracting the virus themselves?
So what ramped up pretty quickly, there was a series of education programs that were put on by local officials through the South Central Task Force. There was one, and that's the Harrisburg area. And there's been some federal education and webinars to, actually talk about. Which surprised me the most is, about the how far the droplets travel when someone coughs or sneezes and things like that, and that was very, very eye-opening when I attended some of those education sessions because, first responders, you go on a car accident, you go on a call, you go right in the house, and you're right into it. You're talking to the person, you're talking to the family, you're right next to them, you're listening to lung sounds, you're taking their blood pressure, and the education of starting to wear the N95 masks and your face shields, that's a big change in a lot of places, and the education has been out there, and I believe the situational awareness of all the emergency providers is really good now.
Do we know how many, if any, have been exposed and have come down with the virus?
I do know that there has been exposures in Pennsylvania, and I do know that I don't know if there's any state agency or anyone that's tracking that publicly, but I know that in the national level, the International Association of Fire Chiefs has a great dashboard that shows individuals that have been exposed and things like that. Now, there was some EMS personnel in the southeastern part of the state that were exposed early on in this, and they were self-quarantining, and it pretty much took out a whole organization. And again, that was early on, 5 weeks ago. And the biggest concern in this is we have many small organizations throughout Pennsylvania, and if a member gets exposed, gets the virus, and then it's transmitted throughout the organization, you know, they may not have the backfill to continue to operate.
Well, you see, when you say took out, and that's what I just wanted to clarify, when you say took out, you mean that crew, that company was no longer in a position for at least 2 weeks to respond. That means that we just had fewer first responders out there.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct. They had to get other people to respond in their place while that organization, their many of their full-time employees were out of service.
We have on the phone right now Chad Deardorff, who is the chief of the City of York Fire and Rescue. Chief, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me.
Some of the questions that I've asked our guest on the program today, I want to ask you, your members, you have any of them been exposed to the virus themselves?
We had a couple that were out either from a family member or potential positive cases, which fortunately they were all negative. But we were, you know, we hit an area there where it took 15 days to get test results back. So we were out of quarantine time before we could even bring them back, which of course cost backfill money to ensure that they, you know, that we have the appropriate amount of people working.
All right, what is backfill money?
Overtime. Basically, we're paying somebody overtime to come in to keep it while we have personnel quarantined at home.
Now, York, you have paid firefighters, so this would be in the City of York's budget, right?
Correct.
Okay. Is that overtime part of the budget, or is that going over budget?
You know, obviously, we budget a set amount for overtime across, you know, the year, and we're only in April, and we're, you know, we have a significant spike in our overtime line item, so we budget a certain amount for unexpected items such as injuries, things like that, but we can't budget in anticipation of something of this nature.
So, and the reason I ask that question is because obviously we're talking about taxpayer money, but Chief, how has your company been, in York, how has it been affected by this?
As Jerry mentioned earlier, we respond a little bit differently to our medical assist calls. We have not changed our call for service type because that, you know, that is what we provide. We provide not only fire protection, but we provide EMS protection as well and services. And we just changed how we respond as compared to what we respond to.
So things are much different. Let's talk. Let's see about. Money is one of the big issues here. Your ambulances, in particular, do you, you working with the City of York and with paid firefighters, ambulance crew, EMTs, that sort of thing, paramedics. It's a little bit different. Do you get your money from private insurers, Medicaid, Medicare?
We do not transport. We have a third party through UPMC that does the transporting, which, yes, they fall under the same bill for service type that was already spoken about. And, you know, as I also represent the Pennsylvania Career Fire Chiefs Association, and which is we're an organization for all career and combination departments throughout the state, and they're seeing the exact same items across the state. With the decrease in call volume, decrease in revenue, increase in expenses, because we're backfilling almost daily, and for different reasons. I have a gentleman that's out, which you know, I would have never thought of what during budget time, who was deployed for the military, and he was one of the. He is basically stuck in Dubai for 60 days. The military cut all travel back to the country. So his deployment was supposed to end in April, and, you know, we have another 60 days tacked on to it, and that's cost to backfill almost every shift that he's supposed to be working.
Mm. Chief Deardorff, thank you very much for calling in today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. For more information on COVID-19, the coronavirus, plus a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health online at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross. Coming up a little later in our program, we'll be talking with Pennsylvania Secretary of Transportation about how PennDOT has adapted to the changes that are caused by the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. Our guest during this portion of the show, Jerry Ozog, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Fire and Emergency Services Institute, and Donald DeRemus, Legislative Chair with the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Jerry Ozog, many of the issues that you're facing now, you've been facing for quite a while now. I mean, I look back. You were on our show in February when we were talking about many of the challenges that you face across the state and before anyone had heard of COVID-19. But it would seem that those problems, those challenges that you were facing have been exacerbated. Now, let's talk about money. What were some of the challenges you were facing before, and have those money problems been exacerbated now?
Well, obviously they have, and I could really honestly tell you that I believe this will be the defining moment for many of those small and medium-sized organizations in Pennsylvania. They're either going to recover or they're going to have to decide on a new business model. They may need to decide to merge or consolidate with their neighbor. Because many of the organizations that I am working with, over 50% of their budget, okay, their budget is made by fundraising activities, over 50%, some reaching 80% to 90%, that those fundraising events, since this has started, has canceled. So they, this is very similar to private business, have had zero income. And many of those organizations are barely paying the bills now. Okay, so this is, and again, here's the prediction: over the summer, I seriously do not think that we're going to be able to have, you know, large events over the summer. This is the exact same time that many of these organizations have street fairs, carnivals, sportsmen's raffles, big events that bring in huge amounts of revenue to them. So the problem we have then is then the organizations, what do you do? Okay, do you ask local government for money that the local governments are going to be struggling with? So this is not going to be over once the restrictions are released. This is going to go way into 2021. So I'm very concerned about the future.
Do you think that there will be companies that will be going out of business?
I think the first step will be is they're not going to be able to replace critical equipment. That's the first thing. Much of their budgets go to replacing critical equipment. Step number one is to push off maintenance and purchasing new equipment. Step number two is taking all the luxury away. If we do incentives for our volunteers, if we do that, so that's step number two. We take that away. Step number three is trying to pay our bills to keep the lights on, pay the insurance, and things like that. Some of the organizations in Pennsylvania are there right now, okay? And that's going to be the great concern there.
You know, what you just listed, think about that. Fundraising activities will be stopped because of this, but street fairs, bingo, chicken barbecues, that the infrastructure that we have to pay for what could be some of the most important first responders infrastructure that we have in this state have to rely on fundraisers like that so that they can stay in business. I mean, I think that boggles the mind for a lot of people.
That's absolutely correct.
Well, let me go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. That's fine. You could go on to your other callers. All right.
Mr. DeRemus, I want to ask you. I mean, I mentioned this to the chief before, but ambulances in particular count on private insurers, Medicaid, and Medicare. But often those reimbursements go to the patient rather than the crew that responded. And that's a problem because often then you are not reimbursed by the patient. Is that correct?
That is correct in some situations. The fact that all the reimbursement we get is actually below the cost of providing the service is the main issue. And with this crisis and all the people going on unemployment, you're going to see a transfer of people with commercial insurance to Medicaid or private pay, which is going to be even more difficult to collect.
Well, Jim, go ahead. Go what you say.
From a funding standpoint, EMS services don't do a lot of fundraising. The majority of the nonprofits raise their money through doing non-emergency transportation. That transportation is non-existent right now because facilities are not moving people. Nursing homes aren't moving people. So the majority of the revenue that we get to support the 911 side is not there anymore. And the 911 call volume has dropped anywhere from 40 to 60% across the state. And that's even been proven nationally.
So I'll ask you the same question they asked Jerry Ozog. Will there be ambulance companies that will cease to exist?
I can almost guarantee that. We saw this coming as the Ambulance Association in early March, and we started collecting weekly financial data from across the state to see what the impact is. My company is currently losing $6,000 a day in revenue.
Wow. Jerry, I want to turn back to you for a moment before we take a phone call. But, you know, many of the companies, I think Pennsylvania, the last figure I saw, and you can tell me whether this is accurate or not, that 90% of those who are first responders here in Pennsylvania are volunteers. And that is one of the huge issues that we have faced in this state, in that the number of volunteers way down compared to what it was, say, back in the 1970s. I mean, way down. I would also think that those volunteer companies, the rural companies, would be the ones that are most at risk. Is that accurate to say?
That is pretty accurate. And again, in our previous shows, we talked about the demographic shift in Pennsylvania in areas with the declining population and populations getting older in Pennsylvania. And again, those rural areas, they cannot depend on tax money because those rural areas have smaller areas and things like that. And it is going to be a challenge. It is definitely going to be a challenge that they're going to need to think of some new models. And I think you know, the challenge that we have is great, but I know we have a lot of good people across Pennsylvania that could come up with some solutions to make this sustainable.
I want to take a phone call now from Elsie Otto, who is a township supervisor of German Township and a volunteer fire chief of the Adai Volunteer Fire Department in western Pennsylvania. Chief Otto, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell me a little bit about, first of all, where is McClellantown?
We are in Fayette County, western Pennsylvania. We're about 20 minutes north of Morgantown, West Virginia.
Okay. So we were just talking about rural fire companies. I'm assuming that your company is made up of volunteers?
Absolutely, 100%.
So I'll ask two parts to this question. One, what have you experienced over the last 10 to 20 years as far as the number of volunteers, and what has this COVID-19 pandemic done to your company?
Well, our fire department has actually bucked the trend and has grown in the past few years, but we've also went outside the box comparative to what other departments do. We take members from outside of our response area. We allow dual memberships, you know, of multiple fire organizations. We have different levels of membership to try to get as many people in and to help. So we have members that fight fires. We have members that just fundraise. We have members that, you know, just sell tickets. You know, we take anybody that is a willing hand, and obviously that passes the background checks and everything like that. We take them into our department. We have grown due to responsible management with our apparatus, with different grants that were acquired, and hard work and dedication by the membership. But that all stopped, you know, in February whenever this pandemic came out.
Okay, so what's happened since then?
The downturn. We were going uphill great, and now we're on a spiraling way down. All of our fundraisers were canceled. We have zero income coming in now, aside from we ramped up ticket sales. You know, we have four or five different tickets, raffle tickets out now because we had to cancel all of our cash. We out in Western Pennsylvania, we call them cash bashes, but they're just raffles, you know, and our large street fairs in June that we're going to have to cancel, which generates the large portion of our annual income. So it's scary time. It's very, very scary. Our department is 100%, well, I shouldn't say 100, but 90% based off of fundraisers and what our volunteers bring in. We receive zero municipal dollars other than our Relief Association allocation, and but that's a separate account. But everything we have is what the hard work and dedication of the members brought in.
So in Pennsylvania, just to clarify and set this straight in a lot of people's minds, that people's lives being saved could depend on raffle tickets.
Yes, absolutely. Now, each municipality, you know, is responsible for having a fire tax if they so choose. My municipality that I'm also elected supervisor of, we do not have any steady income for our volunteer fire departments. What we have is solely on raffle tickets and fundraisers.
So what's your biggest concern, Chief, going forward?
Sustainability, to survive. You know, we're a unique breed in Western Pennsylvania. It's a passion. It's a hobby. It's a brothership. It's everything that you would want it to be, but that may go away because if we can't, we were stripped our right to fundraise. You know, most of the volunteer fire departments never ask for money. You know, we do our thing. We, you know, get all of our training, all of our certification, all of our trucks, you know, inspected, and everything that everybody else does, we do it with chicken sales. We do it with tickets. And now we're not able to do that. So our hands are tied. We've been working diligently with our elected officials to try to get some legislation to help us. One of our local state reps introduced something, and it kind of fizzled out, but the Senate side picked it up and I guess it just made it out of committee, Senate Bill 1122, to give us a one-time grant to help offset some of our costs, and that'd be managed through the fire commissioner's office. So that would at least put a patch on, you know, on the leak right now. But it's scary because the money's not coming in, and it's most of us spend it responsibly. You know, it's not like we have the Taj Mahal fire stations or the brand new fire trucks. We use hand-me-down trucks. You know, we try to update our rescue tools and all of our equipment, like Jerry mentioned. But you know, that's all going to go away now. My department alone's talked about the potential of selling one of our fire trucks to keep the doors open. You know, it's a very, very, you know, trying time. And not to mention, you have to go home and do the same worries. You know, there's folks out there that's not getting paychecks because they were laid off from work that are still, you know, responsible to assist on alarms. So it's very tough to be a volunteer firefighter in Western Pennsylvania.
Chief Elsie Otto of how do you pronounce your fire department?
Ada.
Okay, I mispronounced it.
Yep.
I'm sorry. And you're Township Supervisor in German Township in Western PA. Thank you very much for joining us today, and good luck going forward.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jerry, we're almost out of time for this portion. So, I mean, I could ask this question for what you would like to see, even if we weren't in the middle of this pandemic. But now that we are dealing with the pandemic, what would you like to see to make sure that first responders, fire companies, ambulance crews, EMTs, paramedics, that all these places stay in business are available to the people of Pennsylvania? What has to happen?
Well, number one, we need our members of the General Assembly and the governor's office to start to work together and give us an immediate cash infusion through grant program. That's number one. There's a lot of things that are floating around right now in discussions, but as you know what's going on in the politics in Harrisburg, you could imagine what's happening. We've been advocating for that over a few weeks. We'll see where that goes. That's number one. Number two, we want our communities to step up. We know people will be hurting. We know the economy is on a downturn. But think about those emergency responders. Consider donating cash to the fire companies, okay? Consider, you know, maybe volunteering in some aspect if you're not a want to be a firefighter, but in some aspect. But that immediate cash inflow now is the most important thing. Then, as the years go on, we can start to talk about system redesign and changes.
Jerry Ozog is Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Fire and Emergency Services Institute, and Donald Ramis is Legislative Chair with the Ambulance Association of Pennsylvania. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Scott.
You're welcome, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, we're going to be talking with the coroner, Graham Hetrick, coroner of Dauphin County. Coroners have had a bit of an issue with some of the numbers that have come out from the state. That's not the only thing that we want to talk with Coroner Hetrick about on tomorrow's program, but talking about COVID-19 and the deaths that have been suffered across the state. The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation has instituted several changes in response to the COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent limitations. Included are the closing of the state's driver's license centers, extending expiration dates for licenses, registrations, and inspections, and restricting construction to emergency needs. We're joined now by Pennsylvania's Acting Secretary of Transportation, Yasmin Gramian. Secretary Gramian, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Scott. I'm glad to be on your program.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. This is kind of a general question, Secretary, but how has PennDOT, the Department of Transportation, been impacted by the COVID-19 emergency?
That's a great question, Scott, and I can start from the very beginning when the Governor Wolf gave his directive on stay home and closing down the non-essential services. So everything, every action we've taken is aimed at mitigating the virus's spread to protect the citizens, the employees, and the business partners. It's been a very challenging time for us at the Department of Transportation, and we had to make some quick decisions and pivot all the time on some of the actions that we actually took with our services that we are providing. We would rather err on the side of caution and adjust as needed than wish that we had taken certain measures. Within a matter of days, PennDOT closed buildings and offices across the state and transferred the essential functions, such as the traffic management centers that we have on the regional level and statewide level, to some remote operations. We wanted to make sure that the maintenance team that we have throughout the state, they are engaged statewide to ensure the roads are kept safe and passable. This was very important to us. Our call centers were open, and we were taking calls to make sure that if there are any issues or problems with the roadway system, that we are made aware of it. We did have a skeleton maintenance crew out there, and they were doing inspection and fixing the problems as we were encountering on the roadway system. We constantly were evaluating everything we were doing as we were moving forward. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that we convey and communicate our decisions to the public.
If I could interrupt for just one moment, as I was thinking about this and everything you've just listed, almost every driver in this state is impacted by some of the things that that PennDOT has done. Is there one area in particular that has had the biggest impact or is most significant on Pennsylvania motorists?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, everything we've done is impacting all the drivers and even the folks who are not driving currently. You know, you talked about the driver's licensing center. We wanted to make sure that we put people's mind at ease that, you know, with their licenses expiring, the photo card, ID cards expiring, the permits being expired, that we can extend those deadlines to May 31st. You know, there were a whole bunch of other actions we had to take with the driver's license center on the registrations, emission inspections, folks with disability and parking placards. We wanted to make sure they're all extended to the May 31st. So really bringing comfort and peace of mind to the public was very important to us. As you know, we actually had to shut down some of our rest areas purely because we wanted to make sure we provide a safe environment for the folks who are actually using the rest areas. We wanted to make sure we have enough cleaning supply. I mean, very basic stuff. As you know, the whole country was faced with the issues of having enough toilet papers and cleaning materials and disinfecting materials. So we wanted to make sure as we're opening our centers that we have enough materials to keep it clean, keep it safe. And we understand the importance of it, you know, and we actually put a plan together and we resumed all these services gradually, but it was very in a very thoughtful manner.
You know, I'm curious, that May 31st date, is that written in stone or is there the possibility that that extension could go even further depending on how the pandemic plays out?
You're absolutely right. That's the date as of today. And it may go further, as you mentioned, depending on how the pandemic, situation goes out. And if we flatten the curve, we have a plan to actually resume more of our operations, opening up our driver's license center and the photo licensing center. Obviously, we've put all measures in place. We have a plan to open it up safely. Follow the guidelines of COVID-19, the social distancing, wearing masks, allowing certain number of people to go into our centers. We are actually providing electronic ways of updating their documents. All those services that were available to the public through internet and electronic services, they're still available. We encourage people to actually take advantage of it. But we do have a plan. We have put measures in place, every plan, every phase of our operations that will be resumed moving forward. We've integrated the COVID-19 and CDC guidelines into our plan.
You know, Secretary, just a personal observation. People that I've spoken with about this over the past month or so, it seems as though they're uncomfortable with their license expiring or their registration to a vehicle expiring. First of all, what it shows is that people follow the rules and they take that responsibility seriously. But I've spoken with a number of people who said, well, I'm just not comfortable with my license expiring and waiting till just before May 31st to get this done. I mean, what's that say to you that there are so many people out there that this is something they're worried about?
Scott, I understand. We are not by any means being comfortable with anything that's going on, right? I mean, we're all experiencing a new sensation in our lives that it's out of our control. As a Department of Transportation, we've actually put out a lot of social information on social media to put people's mind at ease with their documents that are expiring. And we are going to do everything that's possible. If we need to extend those expiration dates, we will do that. We will accommodate people when the driver's licensing centers are open, and we do have a plan to open them up to get people in and to accommodate them with their needs. I wish there was more we could do, but, you know, it's a very difficult situation, and everybody is dealing with it, and I totally understand, and I have empathy to everyone.
Mm. If you're just tuning in, our guest during this portion of the program is Pennsylvania's Acting Secretary of Transportation, Yasmin Gramian. We have about 10 minutes left in the program. If you'd like to ask a question, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Gramian, very early on when the stay-at-order came down, on social media, I have to admit that most of the time I'd see this on social media, that there would be a number of people say, well, why aren't we taking advantage of the low amount of traffic on the roads to complete some road construction projects? And you have partially answered this, but I haven't seen many of those here in the last couple weeks or so as this got more serious and there have been more cases. But how would you answer people who asked that question, why not take advantage of the low volume of traffic to complete some construction projects?
Scott, that's a good question. And, you know, it came up many times. But again, as I mentioned before, you know, our approach was different. We wanted to work on the air of the side of the caution and adjust as needed. And we did that. The other thing we wanted to make sure is, we wanted to make sure that our partners are comfortable with resuming construction activities. We work with the industry. We brought in the contractors. We brought in the consultants. We work with our partners on the federal side, FHWA. We worked, with everybody, with Pennsylvania Turnpike, to come up with a plan that was comfortable for everyone to resume the activities. And I also have to say that we never stopped those essential and critical activities on the construction site. We had our people out there. There were 61 projects that were resumed immediately within like 14 days, we saw as being essential and critical to our business. Some of these projects were landslide repairs, critical bridge repairs, tunnel and drainage repairs throughout the state. And slowly, as we were preparing these documents on how to resume the construction activities, and these documents actually address all the COVID-19 requirements, the CDC requirements, you know, to make sure that the people who are out there working on the construction sites, remember, there were our people and the contractors, our partners out there. We wanted to make sure that they feel safe in the environment they're working. And that's why we partner with them. We actually wanted to make sure we don't have any blind spots, that we were careful with resuming all the activities. I understand the traffic volume were down, and there were a lot of work that was being done, and I'm sure public has noticed that. The utility companies continue to do their utility work and utility relocations. Some of the local municipalities continue to do with their paving and road repairs. As I mentioned, we continued with our critical activities on the construction site. We wanted to make sure that our roadway system is safe at all times for the traffic that's using our roadway system.
How is it decided what is critical? It sounds like safety is a big part of that, but how did you decide which projects were critical?
So we put a number of criteria to evaluate our projects. Obviously, what is critical is if you don't take any actions, we have to close the road, or there's going to be some major catastrophe, or there's going to be, it would create some major safety issues for the public that are using our infrastructure system. That's how we decided on the criticality of the project. And some of them was, it just happened through the storms and the bad weather conditions that we have.
Yeah, we've had a lot of downed trees across the state here in the last week or so with the high winds. Secretary, Governor Wolf announced last night that May 1st, that all construction can resume across the state May 1st. Now, that doesn't mean all construction will resume across the state, but does that construction that the governor said can resume May 1st, does that include PennDOT and road projects?
That includes PennDOT and road projects, and I have to say the intention is to resume all construction projects, but there might be some exceptions. I mean, also the governor pointed out the red zones, the yellow zones, and the green zones. Obviously, if we are in the green zones and yellow zones, it's much easier to resume all the construction activities. We're again going to assess the projects in the red zones and make sure that we have enough PPEs and enough masks and everything that's needed to create a safe environment for our contractors and our own construction inspectors when we resume the activities. But the intention is to resume the construction activities as of May 1st, perhaps with some exception.
We had a call from Tammy in Elizabethtown, says wants to verify that extensions already included in the inspection of vehicles, does that include registration? I think I know the answer, but Secretary, I'll let you answer that question.
Yes, vehicle registrations, emission inspections have been extended to May 31st, 2020.
Okay. Another caller said, if PennDOT is supposed to do the work, why did so many employees get laid off? I-81 looks awful with trash everywhere. When are they going to get back to work? They're being forced to use vacation time before being availed to unemployment. There are a number of different issues that the caller mentions there, but what about some of the issues he raises?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, as we are resuming our operations at all levels, the vehicle services, the construction, the maintenance, those employees that have been unemployed, they will gradually come back to work. Again, as I mentioned, Scott, it's a phased approach. Everybody will come back to work. They will have a job. But, you know, we are also working with the executive order. We wanted to make sure that, you know, when they come back to work, that there is work for them, and it will happen. I'm going to ask the public to be patient as we're going through this process.
Mm. Heath from York County says, thank the secretary for approaching the construction projects. He appreciates the empathy from the secretary. So there you go. There's somebody who appreciates the work that PennDOT is doing.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
So going forward, what, you know, we keep hearing that there will be a new normal. What will that look like as far as transportation goes here in Pennsylvania?
So as you mentioned, it's a new normal, and every day we're trying to figure it out, right? I mean, we're going to continue with teleworking. We've actually, throughout this process, we have improved our business processes, Scott. I mean, we have digitized. We are doing a lot of the work and a lot of permitting electronically. Most likely, moving forward, there is not going to be so many touch points with people and public. We can take care of it as they go through our electronic services, go online and apply for certain things and, you know, get it done electronically. We're even thinking about maybe, you know, the driver's licenses and the photo IDs that are being expired after May 31st or, you know, even with the extended deadlines, to maybe do it, update them electronically, use the old pictures and the signatures, extend it for another 4 years. I mean, there's a lot of things that we are considering doing, which is going to be an improvement in our business processes. We've learned a lot throughout this process of COVID-19 and pandemic. I think we're becoming very resilient, very agile, and very dynamic and flexible in how we're doing business. I mean, I'm amazed on the flexibility of our team and how well we're working with our partners on the industry. I've seen a true public-private partnership going through this process, and I'm delighted to see that. There's a lot of things that are being changed, and it's going to become a new normal, and it's all for the good of the business and for the good of the public.
Yeah, I can joke and say, can you use a picture from my 20s on my driver's license? That would go back a few years, but I don't know. It might not look the same if that be the case. Secretary, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. We only have a minute or so left. One thing I did want to touch on, though, in those 40 seconds or so is public transportation. This would seem to be a challenge as far as people being close together.
That's correct. And it's been a challenge, especially in the urban areas, as you know, Scott. Public transportation is a critical need for many Pennsylvanians, right? And, you know, there's been a lot of mitigation related to public transportation coming from the CDC as well as Pennsylvania Department of Health. I tell you, we are doing everything possible to make sure that they have enough PPEs, cleaning supplies, and masks. I was talking to my deputy secretary for multimodal yesterday. She actually has ordered about $100,000 worth of masks for people who are getting on the public transit, for folks who are actually using our public transit system, and the drivers and so forth, to make sure that they're safe and they're comfortable when they're using public transit. Obviously, you know, we realize...
Secretary, I hate to do this, but I'm going to have to cut you off. Secretary of Transportation Yasmin Gramian, hey, thank you very much for being with us today.
Glad to be with you. Thank you very much. Have a good day.